Watch your thoughts, they become words. Watch your words, they become actions. Watch your actions, they become habit. Watch your habits, they become character. Watch your character, it becomes your destiny. Lao Tzu.
Chapter 4, Purpose. Thursday afternoon, 3:38 p.m., recontract. He looked at me and said, "No, thank you." This was a big problem because I forgot my ethics at the door. The desk miscalculated the tag fees on this guy's lease, and it left me some leg in the payment. I skipped my normal process completely. Instead of being transparent and decent, I tried to trick my way into a quick product sale. I said, "By the way, our road hazard package is only an extra $3 a month. Sound good?" Thinking he would just agree, but he didn't. His trust alarm was going off, and for good reason. I tried again, hoping to convey the value this time, but no luck. After the third try, he said, "I guess I can't have the car if I don't buy it. So fine, I'll take it. May I just have the car so I can go home, please?" This whole situation was super embarrassing. Then, his deal wouldn't fund as contracted. 2 days later, I'm sitting with him again for the recon, convicted for my bad act twice. That was a very long time ago, but it was also the last time I wasn't completely transparent with a customer. Today, I recognized that the only way the customer would have bought was after trust was established, and all I did was destroy it. Lesson learned. Finding purpose. On January 15, 2009, U.S. Airways Flight 1549 had to make an emergency landing shortly after departing LaGuardia International Airport in New York. The aircraft, captained by Chelsea Sully Sullenberger, encountered a flock of Canadian geese that flew into both engines and caused a catastrophic failure. He was flying over the city of Manhattan, which made it impossible to land, and he was too far away from the local airports. His only choice was to land the plane in the Hudson River. His thinking and feeling self were displayed over the PA for his passengers as they feared for their lives. Yet, they heard the voice over the PA and felt some level of trust. This was not a man in a state of panic. He was calm while explaining the process of what was about to happen. Now, Sully felt fear just like anyone else would, but his purpose gave him strength. Had he quit, all would have died. But he didn't, and as a result, 155 souls survived. What is your purpose? Making money for the sake of having money isn't enough. What is your why? Money is a tool for bigger things. We must dig deeper to find the underlying purpose for why we want the money. Usually, we find that our sacrifices of long hours and late nights have something very meaningful at the root. We must get in touch with those reasons if we hope to have the courage to be truly transparent with our customers. Storytelling. We believe the story that we've been told about money's value and purpose our whole lives. That story is consistently evolving, and eventually, we all learn that money isn't the key to happiness. It's a tool that can bring some happiness, but it's far from guaranteed. And we absolutely know that without money, we will suffer. We absolutely understand that the bank demands it for our homes and our car loans, and the grocery store demands it for the food that we need. Your customer is working with these thoughts when you're asking them for their money. They likely understand the absolute truth that if they waste money, they will have less groceries in the refrigerator. I mean, that's pretty easy math, and it's absolute. But what about the intrinsic value, their belief in money? Well, that is still just a story, just like the story that you're just another salesperson. So, tell a new story, one where you share experiences of how you have helped other customers through true stories. If you don't have any, get to work, get involved, get personal. This is what builds your authenticity. The more real you are, the more people will trust that you're telling the truth. Storytelling is very powerful. I can convert $50 a month into peace of mind, safety, comfort. It can help remedy stress, but only if the customer believes it gives those things. So instead of trying to use a slick word track designed to manipulate them into being scared, tell your true stories of how people have been helped because of you. The feeling of the transaction will change in a positive direction. According to rational choice theory, humans always work in their own best interest. Based on beliefs, they make decisions that they feel are in their best interest. If I'm your customer and I feel like you're trying to sell me something I don't need or that you're trying to rip me off, then any data that you share with me will become irrelevant. I will say no, and each time that you attempt to overcome my objection, I will retreat more into my fight or flight responses. This is why we must not focus on closing. Instead, we must focus on telling the truth, regardless of what that means. Because over time, the feeling people get from you will be a much more powerful closing tool than a word track. Test it. A customer asks you, "Do I have to decide today?" Now, from our very own selfish perspective, we want to say yes, even if it's not true. Of course, we might say no, but then begin selling on all the reasons why they should buy today. Not because we care, but because we're thinking of our PVR or our penetration or our paycheck. But for the customer, this situation only adds pressure, or worse, fear. What if instead we do the right thing immediately? We're honest. We say no. Counterintuitive, right? Yeah, but follow me for a moment. Imagine that you're the customer buying a vehicle and you ask me, "Must I buy today?" And my answer causes you to feel uncertain about the purchase. You begin to slow down. You begin to withdraw trust. But if I come across completely honest, you can relax. Maybe you'll say no to the VSC right now. That's okay. I might leave the brochure or the menu on the desk, but I don't push. Then a couple minutes later, you ask a question about the coverage. Boom. Now, I begin telling you some real stories. The sale occurs and you feel good about the products and good about our experience together. The art of F&I. You could look at your job like you're an insignificant cog in the machine, or you could look at it like you're a necessary part of an engine. This is a choice. The behaviors that you bring to work will echo through the culture of your dealership, and eventually through the network that you touch in your community. Behaviors like character, leadership, wisdom, doggedness, and self-discipline, showing that you can be trusted to do the right thing. This is something that we must bring to work and expand to become our core purpose. In short, we must always agree to do the right thing, regardless of where that leaves us. The economics of always doing the right thing may not be as attractive on one deal, but over the week, or the month, or the year, or over your whole business career, we can see the economics are largely in our favor once we always opt to do the right thing. To begin with, once people learn they can trust us, there's a lot less negotiation. In order for this to occur, we must let go of the outcome. To be blunt, we must stop our focus on overcoming objections. But first, we must quit behaving in ways that create those objections in the first place. We must show people that we are real. We must demonstrate that our purpose is about helping them have a good experience. Of course, we also have the purpose of generating revenue. But so does everyone else, working anywhere for any type of business. Most businesses only exist because they have found a way to make a profit. The need to make a profit is a given, Adjusting margins accordingly to create the proper culture, well, that's optional. Our foremost goal or focus needs to be on creating positive experiences for our customers and our coworkers alike, then building our growth and profit strategies around those behaviors. When we only focus on profit, everyone tends to suffer. When we focus on creating a quality experience for all parties, it's different. Consider a company like Disney. They are selling an excellent experience and building the price around the cost to provide that experience. Now, being customer-focused sounds easy, but there's a gray area. And many dealers jump deeply into the customer experience. They commit, but it doesn't help their bottom line. Why? Wrong focus. We can't simply focus on our customers. They're often irrational, and they're trying to minimize our profit because years of dysfunctional sales practices have led to dysfunctional consumer behaviors. We need to rein this in. The more professional we are, the more ethical we are, the less dysfunctional the process will be, but it starts with us. F&I managers need to grow into the role of overseer for ethics and standards. Yes, sales of F&I products are still important, but they must take second place to building a sustainable culture of excellence within your store. Most F&I managers are subjected to about 1 week of training on menu presentation and overcoming objections, but it's not deep learning. As a result, it becomes impossible to create a culture of excellence in the store. Because of this situation, they often just become clerks. They obey the desk, and then they burn out. This is a huge problem, but the remedy for this problem is finding purpose. Cui bono. When we begin the interaction with our customers, we are forming a relationship. And if your idea of a relationship is only 30 or 45 minutes, your behavior will reflect it. If the conversation is only about completing a transaction, it will be different than when you're making a friend. This will feel completely different to the customer. There are endless ways to let your customer know that they are more than just another transaction to you. Let's build a relationship with them, one where if you met the customer in the future someday, it would feel positive. A transaction where both parties win. This is our goal, but it takes real commitment to find a win-win. The first problem will be time. The thing about F&I is that nothing happens for 5 hours and then three deals close within 30 minutes of each other. You will quickly be reminded by everyone in the building that another customer is waiting. So it may seem impossible to create a relationship in only a few minutes, but it actually happens all the time. In order for it to occur, we must create trust. We must become more than a part of the transaction to them. In order to have a win-win, we must have a two-way street. It is of paramount importance that you know what you hope to accomplish before you meet them. Ask yourself, who benefits? Cui bono. Are we looking for a transaction where all parties win and leave each other with feelings of respect? I must ask myself, who benefits in this deal, and get my intent customer focused. I only have one chance to make a first impression that inspires them to relax and communicate with me. Am I focused on profit? Of course. It would be irresponsible not to be. But I hope to find the sweet spot where a balance occurs, a transaction where revenue goals are achieved and CSI excels. Can we add efficiency and satisfaction? Can we have a more predictable bottom line? Absolutely. Ultimately, at the end of the transaction, the customer should feel like, yeah, I'd buy here again. Because a perfect transaction leaves feelings of respect and appreciation, and at its very best, bonding friendships. Authenticity. A large part of belief comes from being authentic, but what you are authentic about also matters. If I am authentically and unapologetically a jerk, then only a small percentage of people are going to warm up to me. If I'm authentically smug or too good for those around me, well, even more people will think I'm a jerk. Our goal must be to find the place in between, a place where we live in harmony with our goals, where we find the internal discipline to live accordingly with our values and demonstrate external empathy for people when they try to find their authentic self but fail. Let's discuss your values. Do you always live in harmony with your principles? No? It's okay. No one's perfect. But if we hope to have self-esteem, or if we hope to even like ourselves when we look in the mirror, we must be on that journey. We must try. When we don't try, we begin to disrespect ourselves. Over time, we feel shame. Sometimes we seek an escape through binging on TV or social media, gaming, or on the more serious side, alcohol, drugs, bad food choices, etc. We seek a source of dopamine that temporarily makes us feel a little less suffering, but it doesn't actually fix the problem. Beyond the box, we must try to live according to our principles in our personal lives too. Our behaviors in our everyday lives inspire self-trust, and as a result, we learn to love ourselves a little more. In short, you must be the best version of yourself that you can be. It matters. People feel it. And when other people can't feel it, there will be economic consequences. You 2.0. Finding happiness and success require a process. Here are 10 areas built on the Stoic principles that can help you develop to ensure that you're always improving. Your purpose. Your purpose is in front of you. This means make the most of the present, today. Life is short. The past is no longer within our control. The future is not guaranteed. So we must make the most of it now. Ask yourself, how can I make the most out of my time and my circumstances? Your value. We exist for the sake of one another. We all have unique gifts and talents. Use them to create value for others that need you. Ask yourself, what am I good at? Who can I help with my skills, my knowledge, or my talents? What do people need? What do they want? Your passion. The car business is not for everyone. If you don't love it, what are the chances that you're going to enjoy staying in it or even excelling at it? If it's not your calling or if other passions are calling you away, you must make some adjustments to suit those passions. So ask yourself, what efforts am I making in the areas that make me happy? Your urgency. Once we begin doing what we love, we become obsessed. Not good at your passion yet? So what? Do it anyway. Every opportunity. Create easy goals and keep after them a little bit at a time. Ask yourself, what can I do today to get closer to the ideal life? Your strength. Don't just quit. Eventually, you will have success. Sometimes we hit roadblocks and that's okay. You just show up every day and do what you can. Ask yourself, what would happen if I tried to accomplish at least one of my goals every single day? Your fear. You get what you focus on. Worrying about negative things creates negative focus. Most of life is out of our control anyway, so we must focus on the things that we can control. So ask yourself, is this the best place to focus my thoughts or my energy? Or could I focus them in more positive areas? Your heroes. Finding someone that has already walked the path to their potential or overcame their weaknesses is helpful for motivating us to do the same. So ask yourself, who do I admire and respect, and why? Your circle. Everyone's opinions vary, but none walk in your shoes. Their experiences in life differ from yours, and while they may mean well, it can still be a disruption towards achieving your goals. Ask yourself, where's this negativity coming from, and what are they trying to achieve? your challenges. Whatever is holding you back from living the life you seek is the way. Go address it head on. Get to the other side of whatever's holding you back. Ask yourself, how could my life improve if I could remedy this one problem? Your perseverance. Life goes on. As you achieve goals, new desires and obstacles will await you. The process of working through problems is never ending, but your ability to solve problems will continue to improve as long as you live. Ask yourself, do I need a new purpose? And what around me is good reason for my time and efforts? SOS. Same old story. People always do one of the following three things. 1. They pick packages. We know what to do when they pick a package, right? We print. 2. They ask questions. Do we know how to answer all their questions? I hope so. This is an opportunity to gain trust. Questions are opportunities. We need to embrace them. 3. They object. What if they object? Often, their objection is not based on good data. For instance, a customer that says no before they even see the cost or the coverage of the product or package that you're offering isn't saying no to the product. They're saying no to you. If they don't trust us, the dealership, or the product, it's going to be a challenge. If they've had a negative past car buying experience, or maybe their friends or family have told them horror stories about a dealership, this can make the transaction more difficult for sure, but it is not necessarily a problem. It is an opportunity to create trust. So let's drill down into the behaviors of creating trust. If I do not trust you or I think you're trying to take advantage of me, I'm not going to buy anything from you. If I do not trust you, I will feed you irrational responses every time you try and close me. If I do not trust you, you may wear me down long enough to get my signature so I can go home, but I will cancel as soon as I have an opportunity. As a finance manager, if we want to achieve above average results, we must learn to communicate and we must learn to operate with the spirit of win-win. People can feel the difference when you're only there for yourself. First, do you frame lack of trust as a threat or as an opportunity? Now, if you're trying to take advantage of someone, then lack of trust is a deal killer. But if your intent is about helping them, then you can fearlessly go anywhere in the conversation. What your customer is looking for is twofold. They are looking for you to show them your character and your competency. They want to know that you're trying to treat them fairly and that you know how to create a positive experience for them. We must show them our character and our competency if we hope to communicate with them. If we fail, then they will dismiss us and our products. We show our character by being genuine, by discussing products based on their agenda. This is about helping people solve problems. We also show our competency by having a deep understanding of exactly how our products work and how they will solve problems for our customers. When working with our customers, we must be in the room, not just in our heads. We begin by listening deeply, without a time or profit agenda. We listen. We watch. We learn how to behave in a helping and caring manner. We remember that we are here to serve. We are here to create a positive experience. That is our job. And it's also the most profitable process. Test it. Imagine that you're talking with a doctor or a lawyer. How important is clear communication? How important is it that they care about your results? If they treat you like just another transaction, how would that make you feel? See, it's super important that we understand our intent or what we hope to create during the short relationship with them. So, what is your intent? To make a profit, of course, that is being responsible for good business, but you must compartmentalize that desire here. You must put the customer first. And if that means a 15-minute transaction with no products, then let's get to it. Let's get on to the next customer while they're still excited. I mean, why don't we push here? One reason. There's no trust yet. Imagine that you don't know me, and I decide that you need to listen to my political opinions. And if you disagree, I'm just going to keep pushing. How well is this going to work out for me? The same thing with your opinion about F&I products. If they believe in not getting ripped off and you haven't demonstrated that your intentions are about helping them yet, then they will not listen. They will tune you out. They will argue. They will push the menu back. Or maybe they'll just ask, can I buy it later? Our only hope is to make sure that our intent is focused on them from the beginning. We must genuinely want the transaction to be easy and helpful. We must genuinely want them to leave feeling good about our time together. Anything else is going to be a battle. A culture of excellence. Ever stay at the Four Seasons? The staff practices making the experience exceptional for their guest. They slow down. They authentically make eye contact. They attempt to help, solve problems, or just listen. Yes, it costs more to stay there compared with other hotels, but the experience is incredibly different than those hotels. They focus on creating a positive experience, while we focus on maximizing profits in the shortest time possible. I don't think I need to tell you that there's a profound difference here. Now imagine yourself slowing down and demonstrating that same professionalism and authentic care towards the customer, perhaps even making their interaction with you the best part of their day. Why does this matter? People begin making decisions about your trustworthiness the moment that they meet you, and I promise, if you don't believe that you're there to help them, it's going to be hard to inspire the customer to believe you. Test it. Imagine yourself meeting with a fitness coach. Now, the coach is completely out of shape. He seems unsure about how you're going to achieve the results you seek. Do you move forward with him? Do you hire him? No? Why not? Imagine the same thing in the box. You're buying a car, and you feel like something is off. The F&I manager doesn't look organized. Or you notice the lack of professionalism and begin feeling some uncertainty. You want to buy the VSC and begin to ask questions about the coverage, but the answers are all vague. His answers are preceded or followed by words like, I think, or should be fine, or other non-committal phrases. Maybe instead he sounds scripted or canned. The information overload attempt, filled with vague statements and irrelevant information. It's obviously inauthentic, as if the F&I manager would say anything to sell you. Do you move forward? As previously discussed, there's a dynamic in play here that is incredibly important. You, me, anybody in any transaction ever is working with two different sets of data, thoughts and feelings. They compete with each other, but ultimately feelings will win. Feelings, not thoughts, buy the car, or the service contract, or the gap coverage, or the chemical package, or for that matter, anything. The feeling self wants what it wants, and the thinking self justifies what the feeling self already decided on. If I ask you for directions or instructions, my head or my thinking self will be involved, but if I ask you to listen while I play my favorite song, your gut or your feeling self will be engaged, and you'll begin making judgments and trust assessments about me.
I can't think the music, but I can feel it. Featherfoot. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and freedom. Viktor Frankl.
Chapter 5. Final Thoughts. In order to help people help themselves, you'll need to communicate effectively. But engaging people with new and sometimes uncomfortable information requires tact. It requires you to have the ability to say hard things in a very soft way. You can do this by focusing your intent on helping them. If the product that you're proposing is a good idea, gently discuss the reasons why they will benefit from having it, and then the problems that it will solve. Here's two examples of the same conversation. Notice that the key words have been changed. Most customers want to have a great experience. I suspect that you do too. Now, when I say great experience, I mean an ownership period that's free of problems and inconveniences. We all would like to own a car that doesn't break down, that doesn't depreciate rapidly, and doesn't become uncomfortably expensive. Or, most customers want to have a great experience. I suspect that you do too. When I say great experience, I mean an ownership period that is carefree and easy. We all like to own a car that is reliable, that holds value, that is financially responsible and looks great. Can you feel any difference between the two? Notice that we're not talking about products. It's not of any value to talk about a product because it doesn't solve a problem yet. Also, we don't want to begin by talking about problems. We want to spend time talking about benefits first. When we only talk about problems, people tend to follow prospect theory. They develop a cavalier attitude towards risk. Instead, when we talk about benefits, people are likely to feel warm and fuzzy. They consider what it would be like to adopt a product or service that's going to allow them to continue having that positive feeling. By blending both the benefits and the problems together and doing it in a way that we genuinely seem to be concerned about our customers' experience, we are likely to improve our own experience simultaneously. Another reason that we're not actually talking about the product itself yet is because we don't know if it's of any value to the customer yet. Test it. Imagine that you're trying to sell me a lawnmower. Now, you tell me that this is the greatest lawnmower ever. It mows at different heights, it trims, it edges, it has a bag to take care of all the trimmings. It's quite frankly the best lawnmower in the universe. Unfortunately for you, I live on the 18th floor of a condo downtown. Is your lawnmower really a solution for me? Is your extended warranty really a solution when I think the Honda I'm buying is the best car ever? Is your gap insurance a solution for me when I think that my insurance with State Farm is going to take care of everything? Are your chemicals a solution for me when I think that they're just snake oil? The list goes on and on, but one thing's clear. If I don't believe that I need it, you're not going to sell it to me. You see, all people are either moving away from pain or towards gain. So if we can engage our customers in a conversation about how they would like this experience to go, they're going to share some pretty interesting things with us. To begin with, if they're talking about prestige, enjoyment, comfort, or economy, then they're talking about benefits. However, if they're talking about all the bad things that went wrong with their last car, like the lack of economy or mechanical problems, depreciation, or anything else, then they're talking about the discomfort associated with the car. They're moving away from pain. By understanding which direction they're going in, you can also understand how to most effectively talk with them about providing solutions that work during your presentation. Objections. By now, I think it's fair to say that I'm not going to give you some word tracks to overcome your customers' objections. But in fairness, if I didn't unpack the structure of objections themselves, I think this book would be incomplete. Aside from a few outliers, there are only three main reasons why people object to your products or presentations. 1. No trust. 2. Budget. Or 3. Quality. This is the reality of the challenges that we see, but they present themselves in a variety of different ways. Someone that doesn't extend trust to you might make up a story as a psychological self-defense, also known as a lie. Other concerns, like budget and quality, are in many ways not factual. They're opinions based on beliefs that can be explored and challenged if you demonstrate that you actually care and you have some knowledge of what your products do. Again, a 100% way to close every customer does not exist. you're not going to persuade everyone you meet. But if you can keep your mind from wandering off to your PVR, your penetration, or your quota, you'll always be closer to the sale. Just focus on your customers and their overall experience. Not just the sale, but the ownership experience. If you do that, your profit will occur organically, naturally, and effortlessly. I sincerely hope you enjoyed this book, and I encourage you to reach out with your questions, thoughts, and experiences. This material was written specifically for you, with the intent of helping you find more success in the box, but also in life. Be well, Lloyd. Dedication. I would like to dedicate this book to Jennifer, who stood by my side while I learned the material. It was a difficult journey from great news, the bank included an approval for your extended warranty, now sign here and press hard, to actually having real, authentic conversations with people about helping them towards what I now refer to as the best ownership experience. Her character and ethics have humbled me over the years and helped guide me down the right path. Through her, I've learned that being focused on doing the right thing as opposed to trying to protect my ego leads to more profitable transactions and a more emotionally satisfying life. In short, she is my guiding light and she is my best friend. Thanks, Jen. I would also like to thank Michael Rainey. Without him, this audiobook would not be possible. Thanks.